Whoa, and if you're listening to that music, you know it's Spiritual Perspectives. The fifth Friday of every month that has one, we bring you Spiritual Perspectives, a look at real life from, well, spiritual perspective. This is Scout Bartlett, and I'll be your host. And as always, you're invited to join in Spiritual Perspectives. If you have a question you want to ask, or a point of view you'd like to add in, or even if it's a question that I'm missing, you're welcome to join in at 415-543-8255. So happy last day of 2010. 2010 has been quite a year of transition, quite a year of life-making changes, and a year of anticipating change. So we're looking forward to 2011 to see what's going to unfold. And this morning we have a wonderful guest. Our guest this morning actually has an interesting background. As a lifelong Christian Scientist, he's witnessed many healings of friends and family and those that have called on him for prayer treatment since he became a Christian Science practitioner over 15 years ago. This is someone who's been solidly and now full-time in the practice of spiritual healing and recognizing spiritual healing. But his background includes 3 years of service as an officer in the Army, and then moving out and into the construction business, which isn't actually necessarily where you expect to be thinking of spiritual practitioner, but he moved into the construction industry with his own business. As he moved forward from that, he volunteered to help with his construction background build a teen center, and then served on the board there to study and studied conflict resolution as well as counseling for local teens. As he moved forward, he taught Sunday school at detention center for a few years, and then entered into a public practice of Christian Science. Our special guest this morning is Tim Myers. So, Kwong, if you can bring him up, I think he's with us. And everybody, this is Tim. Good morning, Tim. This is everybody.
Hi, Scout, and hi, everybody. It's nice to be here this morning.
It's great to have you with us, Tim. It's such a delight. We're coming into the end of the year, and I know one topic that you really like to talk about is God's law of love can heal you. In fact, you're going to be up here in the area next year actually talking about God's law of love can heal you. And it's interesting. I'm looking at the information I have, and I don't have a date for that. Do you?
No, actually, I am not going to be in the area.
That's been changed. So sorry.
That is not happening. Yeah, but I do have. What I have done is I have done this talk or talk similar to this on spirituality.com. So if your listeners are interested, after we get done and they want to hear some more questions and answers, it's at spirituality.com, and there's a live chat section there. And if you go there and look up past chats, it's there, and you can hear some of the other things that I've talked about in that area.
Oh, perfect. Thanks. So that's really kind of cute. I was wrong that I thought you were going to be speaking in the area, but I was right to not have a date.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Making myself a quick note here so that I can remind people. God's law of love can heal you. Now, I tend to believe that that we were right in the 60s and 70s when the phrase was God is love. I think that's more of a Taoist view sometimes, but that's certainly my view. God is love, and that God is also a deep and profound and rich energy flow, and not just the old guy with the long white beard sitting in a big chair that I pictured when I was a child. But God's law of love can heal you. Tim, what law are we talking about?
Well, I think that we find the law of love throughout the Bible. The Bible is my primary source for these ideas. I'll also be talking a little bit about another source, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by a woman named Mary Baker Eddy. Obviously, the Key to the Scriptures tells you that it's also tied into the Bible very closely. And what I find through the study of those two books is that the law of love is essential to Christian healing. And by that I mean, if you look through the Bible, there's tons of places where it talks about God as love. And there's lots of laws expressed in relationship to that. Two of my favorites are the two that Jesus gave us: to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and mind, and to love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, to me, those are spiritual laws which I need to practice in my life, and as I do, I find the law of love or the law of God operating in my life for healing.
So, sort of an oddball question, because I notice out there many people maybe have not particularly joyful memories of involvements in things that were labeled as churches. And so I noticed that in a lot of cases, people almost seem to view the Bible as if that's an old and dead book as compared to the newest and latest stuff coming out. So you're saying that in your studies in Mary Baker Eddy's Keys to the Scripture and the Bible, that you're finding current, understandable spiritual law that results in physical as well as emotional healing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, my practice over the last 15 years has revealed to me that there isn't anything that this law of love doesn't heal. And that law of love, as I said before, is essential to what I do as far as, you know, prayer for people, working with people to help them overcome, you know, overcome whatever the disability seems to be. These laws are absolutely applicable today, and it doesn't change because they're universal, they're eternal, they've always been with us, and they're always there. Sometimes, as you say, as we go through, you know, through the years, sometimes things get different emphasis as far as the law, as the laws that we're abiding by, or sometimes they're explained in different ways. But for me, the Bible and science and health with Key to the Scriptures give me an essential basis for spiritual healing and for living my life.
Mm-hmm. So let's just toss this one out, Tim. It's an interesting place that in myself I have never at a gut level agreed with, and yet there are many, let's call them facilities and buildings of seemingly Bible-based organizations that put forward a major concept that God created not only heaven and earth and so forth, but also rigged the game with a counter player, the devil, and that devil is after us and attempting to make us all go some wrong path and then end up for eternity in some place that gets called hell.
Yeah. Jesus called that devil. It's interesting. Jesus, in his description of that devil, at one point in the scriptures, called him a liar and the father of it. And that's been important to me because if I can recognize that the devil, so called, is a liar and the father of it, then what is it that erases a lie? It's the truth. And for me, the truth is that God as love would never put us in a position where we have to suffer. It's not God that does that. In that first chapter of Genesis in the Bible, there's a story of creation, and it's what I often talk about as creation seen through a spiritual lens. And when I look through that spiritual lens, what I see is that God created everything in 6 days. On the seventh, he rested. But when he looked back at his creation, it was all good. There was no devil there. We're created there, and it says that we're created in the image and likeness of God. So when I look through my spiritual lens, that's what I see. My prayers help me to look through that spiritual lens. Now, there's another story in creation in the second chapter where it talks about, that's where we get into the Adam and Eve story, and where the serpent or the devil talks to Adam and Eve and causes them to get off the path and to find themselves hiding out in the garden. There's an interesting verse at the beginning of that chapter, though, where it says, and a mist arose. So everything that happens in that second chapter for me happens within that sense of a mist. Mary Baker Eddy explains it as an allegory, you know, something that's there but isn't really true, but yet it's something that we do have to deal with. The way that I deal with it is by shifting my gaze from looking through that material lens to looking through the spiritual lens and recognizing that the truth is I'm created in the image and likeness of God. And therefore, my relationship with God is always intact. And that helps me, through my prayer, to overcome all of those suggestions that the devil would throw at me. So, whether it's a suggestion that I'm sick or somebody else is sick, whether it's a suggestion of the violence that we see in the world, all of those things I can overcome to some degree by looking through that spiritual lens and praying to see myself more clearly as that image and likeness of God.
All right, I'm really going to put you on the spot here, Tim.
It's all right.
You think of the devil as a malevolent individual or consciousness.
Well, I think of the devil as the suggestions that come into our thinking when we're not thinking of ourselves as the image and likeness of God.
Yeah, sometimes I think of that as I think of the devil as literally just being the aspect of us that gets confused into our humanness, or I think you described the lens of the physical world, and forget the essential truth of our nature is that we are indeed a spiritual being formed in the shape and the image of that which is God.
Yeah, I think that helps to explain it. Again, I go back to the idea, if the devil is a liar and the father of lies, then, you know, when somebody tells a lie about me, what I want to do is I want to know what the truth is. And when I go to the Bible and I look in that first chapter of Genesis, I see that what the truth is that God has created me good. And therefore, that sense of goodness destroys the lie. That law of love that we were talking about helps me to see myself more clearly. If God is love, then that law of love helps me to see myself more clearly as that child of God in his image and likeness. And I've seen over and over again, when I do that, and through my prayers, when I realize that, then, hey, it causes those other things to disappear from my life and from the lives of others.
So you used a phrase a moment ago, Tim, of I shift my focus to that spiritual lens. I'll say it that way. I'm not sure I've got it exactly remembered correctly, but I shift my focus from that physical lens to that spiritual lens. That is a very important amount of information in just a couple of words there. I shift my focus to that spiritual lens. Tell me what that means.
Well, what I have found is it's based upon my idea of prayer or my concept that I have learned about prayer. Prayer helps us to shift our thought, to change our thought. There's lots of ways to pray. I know one of the things we've talked about before when I've been on your show is how do we pray?
Yes.
Well, there's lots of ways to pray. In Science and Health, the very first chapter's title prayer, and it's 17 pages. It's got probably 90 different ways to pray in it.
Wow.
But there's some really basic things about prayer. One is learning to trust in the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and mind. Another is recognizing that here's what Mary Baker Eddy says on the very first paragraph about prayer, and it's real basic to our prayer. It says, the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of him and unselfed love. So what I'm talking about is I'm not just...
Please.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt your flow, but would you just say that again, please? That was
sure.
So deep. I want to make sure the listeners can hear that. And they don't have a rewind button.
The prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of him and unselfed love. And what that means to me is that while faith is real important in my tradition, and I believe in the power of faith, I want to take it a step further to the understanding of God. I want to understand that God is love. I want to understand that God is the all-knowing and the all-seeing, that God is supplying me with whatever it is that I need. And my prayers help me to do that. The unself-love part means simply I need to get myself, my human opinions, my human emotions, all that stuff out of the way. to allow God to answer my prayers. Then prayer becomes very practical, not abstract. And so what that does is it helps me to shift my view so that I'm looking through that spiritual lens and seeing myself in the image and likeness of God, seeing myself in relationship with God, with that power of love. And then I see the power of love operating in my life.
There's so much more to dive into on that. I just want to take a moment to remind people that this program, Spiritual Perspectives, is originating on KEST out of San Francisco. And Spiritual Perspectives airs on KEST every time there's a fifth Friday of the month. This is Scout Bartley, your host, reminding you that this is Looking at the World from a Spiritual Perspective. And if you'd care to join into the conversation, you're welcome to. The phone number for the station is 415-543-8255. So, creating that concept, we'll jump back, and I think you've just answered that, but I want to get a little more personal. Tim, what do you find as the most profound aspect of that word prayer for you, yourself, personally?
I think that the most profound aspect of it is the sense of God's love that it brings into my life. You know, when I pray the way I pray, so much of it is based on that sense of loving God with all my heart and also loving my neighbor as myself. And when I can see that that love is real, that that love can be expressed, that that love has power, then the prayer becomes inspirational, it becomes uplifting, and it's healing. So that's the most profound.
I rode right over that, Tim. Say that again.
That's the most profound sense of prayer. And that kind of prayer has power. When you feel that power of God's love in your life, it can heal anything. Let me give you an example.
Please.
You know, there. You mentioned that I had served in the military for 3 years. Well, it was at a time when, obviously, Vietnam was going on, and it was a challenging time, but there was an incident that I had while I was in the military that really helped me to understand that power of God. And what happened was I was on leave before I went to officer candidate school, and I was here at home in California. And in California, in those days and probably today, we drove around barefoot a lot in our cars, going to the beach and that kind of thing. I had an old Volkswagen, and I was driving down to the beach, and I cut my heel on a piece of what must have been rusty metal at the bottom of the car. Didn't think too much about it. Went off to officer candidate school a week later. And as I was in officer candidate school, at the very beginning, you have to run everywhere. You don't get to walk. So it's not someplace where you're leisurely walking around. And as I began to run everywhere, the heel started to swell. And pretty soon there was swelling going on in other parts of my body. So it seemed like there was an infection of some sort. I put foam rubber in the boot because I didn't want anybody to see me limping. If they did, they would have, put me in the hospital, and I would have had to start training over again, which would have meant an extended period of time in the Army, which wasn't something that I was necessarily interested in.
It's funny how the Army does that.
Yes. And so I, one night, I was coming out of the mess hall, and the tactical officer in charge walked up to me, and he said, "You're limping." And I said, a little bit, sir. He says, "Well, if you're still limping tomorrow morning, you're going to have to go to the hospital." And so that evening, I called a friend of mine here in California who was a Christian Science practitioner, does the same kind of work that I do. In other words, prays for people for spiritual healing from all kinds of different things. I called her, and we just talked for a few minutes. I don't remember specifically what she said to me, but what I remember about that experience is the feeling of love that I got. Now, the Army does a lot of things for a lot of people, but one of the things that it doesn't necessarily do is cause you to feel loved.
Not necessarily.
No. And so, I got this great sense of her love for me and of God's love for me, because she must have talked something about that. So I went back to my barracks that night, and I prayed a bit before I went to sleep just to continue to feel that sense of God's love. I went to bed, and when I woke up in the morning, all of the swelling was gone, All of the pain was gone. It had completely disappeared. And to me, that was evidence of God's love, and it was something that I could carry with me through the rest of my Army experience. And when I felt myself, you know, falling into those places where I didn't feel loved, or I felt like there was just too much stuff going on, I was able to recall that feeling, and it really helped to get me through the Army. And I still think about it today, knowing that that's the power of God's love for us. And through prayer, that power can be realized. And I've seen it happen in lots of different ways.
Lots of times when I'm talking about that love concept, I'll actually refer to it as love is the word that we have to label the flow or the experience of energy or aliveness flowing in us. And when I'm working with that in classes and students, I'll work with it like that we forget or we close off that flow of energy or aliveness in us, and that it's a stage of coming back to letting that aliveness flow in us. Does that fit at all with what you're experiencing, and how would you phrase it, Tim?
Oh, I think so. I would phrase it in terms, again, of as I look through that spiritual lens, I realize what God is doing for me and what God has already done for me. I often think of God as father and mother because the qualities of God express both the fatherhood and the motherhood of the parent. And when I realize that, and I realize that that power is present to help me do whatever it is that I need to do, then you're right, you do feel it. And it helps you to go out and do the things that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you used in this case, you spoke with a friend who was a Christian Science practitioner, and I assume that you and they did a little bit of what I'll say client and practitioner might well do. So if someone were to be working with you, looking toward reopening to that sense of love and that sense of spiritual flow, connectedness into the all, how does something like that go? What's that look like?
Yeah, the way that it goes basically is what I'm interested in is people understanding more about God. There's a statement in Science and Health that Mary Baker Eddy makes where she says it's our ignorance of God, divine principle, which produces apparent discord, and the right understanding of him restores harmony.
Ooh, say that again.
It's our ignorance of God, divine principle, which, let me quote it exactly. Hold on a second, I got it right here.
Cool.
It is our ignorance of God, the divine principle, which produces apparent discord, and the right understanding of him restores harmony. So what that means to me is whatever the problem seems to be, rather than focusing on the problem, what I'm interested in doing is focusing on the idea of what is it that I need to know more about what God is, and what this person's relationship to God is. How can I help them to understand more clearly what God is and what their relationship to God is? No matter what the problem is, it doesn't matter whether it's a physical problem, whether it's a business problem, a relationship problem. I start from the basis, I need to know more about God and what God is doing here. And so do they. And so the prayers help to reveal what it is I need to know about God. And as we pray along those lines, sometimes what the problem seems to be isn't really what the problem is. It may be something totally unrelated, something else that's going on, seems to be going on in their lives. But the prayers help to bring out what needs to be done. But it's really that sense of inspiration and that feeling of God's love that quiets the fear or gets rid of the bad stuff. Yeah, it's interesting how often when I sit down with people, the first thing that we need to handle or pray about is fear. Because oftentimes if we handle the fear, if we pray about the fear and get rid of the fear, no matter whether it's, again, whether it's a physical problem or a business problem, if the fear goes, the whole problem goes with it.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because
there's a lot of people that use fear as an acronym of false evidence appearing real.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's that wonderful statement in 1 John in the Bible where it says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. So, again, knowing more about what love is, what perfect love is, helps to bring about that casting out of the fear.
So, a lot of descriptions of the concepts of man and God create an image of, here I am, I'm this guy, and there's God, that guy, gal, or whatever, but two separate beings. And I'll just toss that one up.
Yeah, and my understanding of it, and in my practice, what I have found is that there is no separation. Again, separation is one of those devilish thoughts that would come in and tell us that we're separated from God or separated from good. But the prayers help me to recognize that I can't be separated. How can I be separated from the Father, Mother that created me? In his, her image and likeness. There's no way I can be separated. It may seem like there's a sense of separation, but the true knowledge of God as Father, Mother helps us to get rid of that seeming and to see more clearly that right where I am right now, God is here. God is loving me. God is caring for me. And that helps to change the circumstances under which I'm living.
I've been pondering and studying one of the master prayers. This one happens to have been taught by Jesus. And it starts with the phrase, Our Father, at least in the English translation that I'm most accustomed to.
Right.
And I looked at that thought and thought about the fact that my father is half of my DNA. And my mother is the other half of my DNA. And I just began playing with the whole notion that in a way, that profoundly states that I am half that energy flow that is God, and half that energy flow that is, we'll just say, the experience of Mother Earth, Father and Mother, and that my role is continually, which half do I feed, to borrow from about 16 different spiritual studies right there. But it's continually a role of which half do I feed my awareness into.
Yeah, and I think I see that probably, Scout, more as a whole and complete concept of God. I'm not sure I'd divide it into halves. I think that all of the qualities of the fatherhood and all of the qualities of the motherhood are complete. And so, you know, we want to feel that sense of completeness. Yes, there are times where we want to express a little more of the sense of the motherhood of God. And at other times, we want to express more of the fatherhood of God. Whether we're male or female, the gender makes no difference. We all need those qualities of strength and power. We all need that sense of love and compassion and kindness. We need that whole sense about us if we're going to be successful, happy.
And in a funny way, when we reach a point of healing, as you've described it, we're reaching a point where we're letting go of the deep belief in the physical illusion. I'll phrase it that way, and you can just put it back together better. But we're letting go of the deep belief in that physical illusion, and we're returning to a deep belief in a perfect image of self, which is a reflection of God. So moving into that healing is when we are letting go of that, and yet to function humanly, we certainly need to maintain an awareness of the experience of humanness, or we won't, you know, it's like, Yeah, it was a funny quote. Somebody was quoting from a major television personality. They were talking about Christmas gifts, and someone said, well, I need a gift for thus and such. And this personality said, well, here's this gift. It's only $100. And they said, well, no, I need something a little less expensive. And they just said, less expensive than $100? And they'd clearly lost track of, for some of us, $100 is still a significant amount of money.
Yes.
And so if I move completely into that level of spirituality, I still want to maintain my awareness that the path through humanness doesn't always make $100 easy, as it were.
Well, you know, there's a human and a divine coincidence. In other words, the things coincide. What I mean by that is that the prayer is made practical. It doesn't do any good for us to go off, you know, and think, hey, I am totally spiritual, so I don't have to eat. I don't have to dress myself. I don't have to do those things. That doesn't make sense. But what the spiritual helps us to do is overcome the limitations of the human. It helps to lift ourselves up out of those situations humanly that we would prefer not to be in. But the prayers are very practical. They're not abstract. It's too abstract if we're just claiming our sense of spirituality without recognizing that that's going to have an effect in my day-to-day living.
Bingo.
Where I am right now, I'm still working out my humanhood.
Yes.
But I can be more effective in working out my humanhood if I shift from looking through that material lens to looking through that spiritual lens and seeing that the reality is I'm the image and likeness of God.
Yeah, Richard
All
Bach
of the qualities. Go ahead.
Richard Bach has a quote in the book Illusions where he says there's a very simple test to find out if your spiritual studies and your spiritual path are complete. If you're still here, they're not.
Well, that certainly seems to be the way it is. So, and I also think that, you know, one of the tests that I always ask myself when I'm praying and I've got decisions to make in this experience is what I'm going to do going to bring forth some sense of the goodness of God? God is always good. If I'm going to love the Lord thy God with all my heart and soul and mind, my test has to be, is this decision that I'm making helping me to love God more? And is it going to help me to love my neighbor more?
Tim, could
In fact, is it going to help me to love myself more?
Could I phrase that, and I'm just making sure I'm understanding it, because you said, is this decision I'm going to make going to help me to love God more, to love my neighbor more, and out of that even love myself more? Could that be equally phrased, is this decision I'm going to make going to fill me more with that love which is God, fill me more with that love which is God when I'm thinking of my neighbors, and fill me more with that love which is God when I'm even thinking of myself? Am I understanding this correctly?
I think so. I think that the concept of filling, though, is, for me, the recognition that I'm already filled.
Ah.
Okay? Because
yes.
God has already created me full. So what I'm doing is recognizing more clearly, going back to that idea, it's my ignorance of God that produces the apparent discord. My knowledge of God tells me that I am already filled with that sense of love. All I'm going to do is, through this decision, I'm going to find myself expressing that sense of fullness more fully.
Yes.
In a clear way.
So if we could, I would like to walk through some of the mechanism here. We start out with you, young and stupid, in the Army. Not necessarily that the stupid and the Army go together, but with you, young and stupid, and in the Army, you cut your foot. Clearly, it's easy to believe in a cut foot because, you know, your eyes will tell you that it's cut and the nerve cells will tell you that it's cut. So you cut your foot. You decided to believe in and live with a cut foot in spite of the fact that you had a background that included an understanding of healing until it was going to cost you more days in boot camp, as it were. And that developed enough urgency to say, whoa, hey, let's not have this going on. Let's choose to heal this. Now, in the healing process, you talked about letting go of the fear, and you mentioned in the morning there was no longer any evidence of a cut foot. Were you focused on the foot, the cut, or what?
Yeah, no, I wasn't focused on the foot or the cut. I think that one of the keys to spiritual healing is turning away from what appears to be the problem and focusing on what my sense of relationship with God is all about. Okay, what I was focused on was that sense of God's love for me.
With no focus
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, with no focus on the foot at all.
No focus on the foot at all. In fact, oftentimes I find that if we can forget about, if I pray correctly, it helps me to forget about the whole concept of the matter being, what I'm seeing with my eyes. Because I am so focused on what I know God is doing and what I know that God is seeing, that then what I thought was the problem disappears.
I don't have to create an image of a healthy foot. I can let God figure that one out.
Exactly. Exactly. He's already done it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's a lot it's a lot easier to change our thought about the foot than it is to change the foot. Okay? In other words, it's a lot easier to change the thought than it is to change the matter. If I'm constantly focusing on the matter problem, the matter body, the physical body, it's much more difficult for me to think about changing that than it is to change the thought about the body. But what I find is when I change the thought about the body, when I bring that thought into consonant with what God has created as my, quote, spiritual sense of body, which manifests itself in a human condition, certainly. But when I do that, when I'm clear about that, then that physical sense of body changes and expresses more harmony.
I've watched across the New Age community, as it were, a growing place where people are beginning to be afraid of their thoughts because they're grasping the notion that thought affects thing, and they're beginning to be afraid of their thoughts. So let me toss this first question. I have several questions here that I want to just run by you. And I'm just gathering from your experience and from the experience you've had with working with a large number of people where the laws and the rules you work from proved themselves successful. So I noticed that there's a place where people might then be afraid to remember that they had had an experience of a cut foot. So once you stepped out of having your focus there and you woke up in the morning, did you still remember that yesterday your foot had hurt?
Yeah, yeah. And what that brought into my experience was a great sense of gratitude. You know, it's important for us to remember that because then we find ourselves expressing gratitude for the fact that God is present in our lives. God is healing our lives. And I think there's lots of justification in the Bible for that. In Jesus's, you know, in the healings that Jesus did, sometimes the people came back and thanked him. Sometimes they didn't, but oftentimes there was a great sense of gratitude.
Absolutely.
I don't just a clarification. I don't think of what I'm doing and what I'm the approach that I'm taking as New Age necessarily. I think it's actually Old Age. Christian Science or the idea of these spiritual laws of healing have been around in the Bible forever. So we're not really doing anything new in that sense. Healing happened in the Bible for 300 years after Jesus. I mean, healing happened in society for 300 years after Jesus was here. It was only after that time that all of a sudden people started thinking about the healing of sin, but not necessarily the healing of the physical body or sickness.
Yeah, and it's always important for people to remember that the Bible didn't get written down for 200 or 300 years until after Jesus had been around, or that part of
some of it,
those stories.
Some of it, yeah. But these principles that we're talking about are basically, I refer to them as Old Age principles, not New Age principles.
Exactly.
Not that there's anything wrong with New Age, but it's a different kind of approach. The mind body experience is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the God experience.
Well, I think that people that you know, I might refer to as the New Age community or spiritual community, it is a lot of our listenership. So we're outside the choir loft here today, but it's about rediscovering something that they know deep inside themselves is true and finding their way back. And so sometimes even, I notice with people studying with me and other groups that I'm in, even sorting through the plethora of material to find the stuff that's actually been proven that works becomes a very important part. And that was a piece of what I wanted to bring forward.
Yeah, sure. That, and don't get me wrong.
These are real proven tested laws.
Yes. Yes, and don't get me wrong. I'm not being critical of the New Age or your listeners. All I'm saying is that the approach that we're taking is just a little bit different than that. In some way,
it had a longer test than many of the authors out there.
Yeah.
A very much longer test of many of the authors out there, and that's certainly a piece that I look for everywhere in my work is. I'm not the least bit interested in somebody that read about it and now can talk about it, whether they're in a church or a New Age workshop or any other format. I'm not very interested in somebody that read about it and now they're talking about what they read. I want to know they're embodying their practice, or as somebody said about me, I don't want somebody that walks their talk. I want somebody that talks their walk.
Yeah. And I think that's the importance of the practicality of our prayers.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at in the history of Christian Science, for example, we have a documented healing that goes back to, well, Mrs. Eddy was around at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th. The church started at the end of the 19th century. We have documented healing in Christian Science journals and Christian Science sentinels, which are our monthly magazines and our weekly magazines. There are documented healings from that time forward. Some of them have been medically diagnosed situations. There's all kinds of things that have been healed. In fact, there isn't probably anything that hasn't been healed. But that is all documented. It's very important to me that this stuff is practical, because as I said before, otherwise it's just abstract. Anybody could talk it, but as you say, you need to walk it.
Yeah.
And my experience has been that through the application of these principles and laws, it is possible to demonstrate the same kinds of things that Jesus demonstrated.
So,
to do the same kinds of things that Jesus did.
So there's a place jumping way back to your Army officers training. And I'll just take a moment now to remind listeners, this show is Spiritual Perspectives. It shows up every time there's a fifth Friday in the month, and then several special events between those. And it originates out of KEST in San Francisco. This is Scout Bartlett, your host. So, Tim, there's a place here where you told a story about having cut your foot when you were in Army officer training. And that cut actually became important to you because it was going to effectively, accidentally, sentence you to additional time in, well, a boot camp-ish, not-so-pleasant experience. You woke up in the morning. You spoke with a friend who was a practitioner. You got your focus back. You woke up in the morning with your foot no longer going to sentence you to additional boot camp-ish experience. In fact, it was completely healed. You mentioned a sense of gratitude. If I were looking for the flavor of that, would that be anything like a dear loved one or a dear friend when they're back in my presence, because we just had the holidays, and I've forgotten just how wonderful it feels to be with them and to be in my love of them?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think our goal is to have that feeling constantly. Somebody once said that we need an attitude of gratitude.
Yes.
And that's a really valid point, because gratitude heals. There's no question that, you know, gratitude, that thought about being grateful for what God is doing can bring healing into our lives. So it's a real essential part of what we do. But the gratitude for me is based upon more and more what I know about God and what God is doing in my life. What it means to have a father, mother, who loves me as much as God loves me. And knowing that that law, you know, that love is not discriminatory. God doesn't just love me and he doesn't love you, or he doesn't love your listeners. That universal law of love is there for everybody. We're all included.
And it's a remembering to come back to it. Seems to be a very key element in what you've been talking about. It's a remembering to come back to it.
Well, it's a remember. Yes, it's a remembering to that it's always there, present for us. Sometimes we seem to forget. Mm-hmm. It's a remembering to identify ourselves as that loved child of God. I love that fact that Jesus said we have to love our neighbor as ourselves. Sometimes we forget that we can't love our neighbors unless we love ourselves. Or we don't love our neighbors very effectively unless we love ourselves. The best way I know to love myself is to see myself more clearly as a child of God, created in his image and likeness.
I've certainly seen a number of people during my lifetime that have a much higher level practice of thinking charitable and loving thoughts of others much more strongly than they do think charitable and loving thoughts of themselves. And they get caught up in the notion that, well, to love yourself is to be egoism or egotistical.
Yes. Yeah. Mary Baker Eddy talks a lot about self-love and how we have to get rid of self-love. We have to immolate that false sense. We have to get rid of that false sense of love. What I'm talking about, obviously, is not an ego thing. Self-love is an ego. What we're trying to do is get the ego out of the way. And the best way I know to get the ego out of the way is to realize that, wait a minute, I'm totally dependent upon God. I'm trusting in the Lord to make all my decisions for me. And I'm not leaning unto my own understanding, as it says in, was it Proverbs? So it's really important. But identifying myself that way and identifying others that way is what brings healing. That's what Mary Baker Eddy found. Let me just give you a little background on Mary Baker Eddy, just because some of your listeners may not know. She was a woman in the 19th century who had the first half of her life was pretty rough. She had physical illness. She had all kinds of things going on. She'd been married a couple of times. The husbands had deserted. One had died, and the other had deserted her. She reached a point in her life where she had an accident, and she was declared to be in a critical condition. The doctor was called, and the doctor said that she wasn't going to make it. Suffered for 3 days. Asked for her Bible on a Sunday morning and began to read. We don't know exactly what it was, but it was something. Some of the healings that Jesus had done. It's described in different places, different ways. But the reading that she did that morning and the prayer allowed her to get up off of the bed and actually go out and greet the caretakers who were taking care of her. And that was the beginning of a complete healing. For the next 3 years, she studied her Bible, and she felt like she found these laws that I'm talking about. God is love, those spiritual laws that could be applied. She went out and tested them and applied them and found that she could heal herself and she could heal others. And then she began to teach others how to heal. And eventually she wrote those ideas down in a book called Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. For those who are interested in some of the things I'm talking about, there's a website, christianscience.com, where there are lots of questions answered. You get the basic principles, some of which I've been talking about, but some much more extensive. It's been around for ever since then, and lots of people have found healing through the study of the Bible, which is our primary source, and science and health.
You know, early in the program, Tim, you also mentioned that if folks would like to hear more of what you've done in terms of talking, they could go to spirituality.com. What a great web name. Spirituality.com. And then how do they find you in there?
There's a section up on the right-hand side where it says live audio chats, and just at the bottom of that it says past audio chats. And if you click on that button, the past will pop up, and I think the talk I did is titled How the Law of Love Heals, or How God's Law of Love Heals.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And for those of you listening, I'll remind you that I am Scott Bartlett, but our guest today is Tim Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, when you're going and looking him up in there, in spirituality.com. So coming back to a practice of healing, because I think that's, in truth, I think that's everything that people are looking for in so many various studies, but not necessarily healing as in my foot is cut, but healing as in coming back to that core essence of who we really are. And I love I can't attribute it, I don't remember who said it to me, but one of their comments was, if you suddenly notice that God seems distant from you, who do you think moved?
Exactly.
And so there's a real place in there where I think, we did a Healer's Corner show here, and one of the taglines there was, healing is not to be reserved for disease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How would you define the word healing, Tim?
Well, when I think of healing, I think of a growing sense of relationship with God that changes how I see myself and how I see others, and that manifests itself in a way that I can understand it. In other words, again, it's not abstract, but healing happens when I change my thought about who I am, or when I change my thought about who somebody else is. And what that causes is, obviously, we think differently about ourselves, and when we think differently about ourselves and recognize we're looking through that spiritual lens and seeing ourselves in that image and likeness, that gets manifested in our experience. And it can be the healing of sin, it can be the healing of sickness, it can be the healing of a business experience, a relationship problem, an employment problem, all of those things.
Oops, I just did that classic thing of knocking the phone on the floor.
So when you glad it was you and not me. I'm thinking they probably thought that was me.
No, I was so thrown off that they just threw the phone on the floor. So when you talk about a healing of a business experience, what would that phrase be describing?
Well, you know, in my business, when I was a general contractor in the contracting business, there were all kinds of opportunities for seeing that we needed to have a healthy business. Construction, as you know, rolls with the economy. Sometimes it's rolling and sometimes it's flat. But I found in my experience, in my business experience, that prayer helped me to bring that sense of sometimes surprise, but always a sense of abundance. One of the things that I learned early on in my business experience was to recognize that the business did not belong to me. It belonged to God. And that was an important concept because it took the responsibility off my shoulders. It didn't mean I didn't have to do anything, but it simply meant that I could trust a little more in the fact that, hey, wait, God was here. What is it that I'm supposed to do next? And I found, you know, many times in my business experience where I did things that I might not have done because I realized that the business belonged to the Father. It belonged to God. And in the construction business, that was helpful because then when I went to bid projects, I realized that if I was supposed to get that project and this business actually belonged to God, there wasn't anything in the world that was going to keep me from getting that job. And if I wasn't supposed to get that job, there was no way in the world I was ever going to get it.
It's really funny how that takes a lot of pressure off to put it into the just do what seems your best and let it unfold, as opposed to, ooh, I need to figure out exactly what angle I need to take and how I need to go after this.
Yes, yes. Prayer helps us to change how we approach those things, how we approach our job searches, how we approach our relationships, because we begin to realize, wait a minute, it's not all my responsibility. I can listen to what
God is saying.
And yet
I'm going to toss this in, Tim, because sometimes I've watched people drop into, early in their studies of growth, I've watched them drop into the, am I supposed to, am I not supposed to, I'll let it unfold, and there's a giving up and going complacent as opposed to continuing to strive toward their own highest expression, so that what unfolds can be an expression of their own highest good.
Yeah, I think that the goal for me has always been, how can I, or I shouldn't say has always been, but as I've grown into this understanding, the goal for me has been, how can I express God best in this experience? That's my primary goal. Now, that may manifest itself in other goals. To have the best business that I can possibly have. That becomes the goal, because it belongs to God, and you want to see the best manifestation of that business that you possibly can. So, again, it's not abstract. If we get abstract with it, you're right. We just sit back and wait for God to do whatever it is God's going to do, and we find ourselves sitting there for a long time. But if we realize that these prayers are practical and inspirational, then when we pray, we find that sense of what we're supposed to do. We move with that intuition of good that moves us forward and carries us forward. And it may carry us in a different direction than we thought we were going to go, but we have a bit more confidence. That doesn't mean that we're necessarily always right. And if we go in the wrong direction, I have found that God will correct us and move us back to where we're supposed to be.
Yes. I did learn along the way to no longer pray to be blocked if I'm going in the wrong direction, but instead to be persuaded to go another way.
Well, and oftentimes going in the wrong direction is when we learn the most.
Yeah.
You know, when I came out of college, I was an English major. I was going to be an English teacher. And there were no jobs in the Los Angeles area, so I ended up going into construction. I was never particularly adept with a hammer and a saw. I was wonderful at doing the paperwork, being able to bid the projects, talking to customers, and doing all of that part of the work. And we were very successful at it. But what I learned from that experience, even though that might not have been my first choice of employment, all of the things that I learned brought great blessing to me.
Yes. Fabulous. God, Tim, I love it when we get to talk. We could carry this on for another 3 hours easily. And unfortunately, while God is infinite, radio time has an ending. This has been Spiritual Perspectives. We've been talking with Tim Meyer. You can find more on spirituality.com, or you can go and look in the concepts of Christian Science, or find the book, Science and Health, with Keys of the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. It doesn't require a PhD to be able to start in the book and work your way through. This is your host, Scout Bartlett, reminding you that today is a perfect day for you to go out and have a great day on purpose. My love to every one of you, and my thanks to you for all of the ways you've contributed to my most recent year, and I look forward to how we'll share next year.